What's up, y'all? Welcome to class. This is Diseducation. My name is Mignon. I'm a Black non-binary teacher.
And I'm a Vietnamese American teacher named Quinn. Together, we are looking at what it's really like inside U.S. classrooms and schools through our eyes as teachers of color. In other words, what's happening behind closed classroom doors?
Because the reality is that U.S. education is burning, and students and teachers of color are the ones on fire. This is Diseducation.
You know, Mignon, as you and I wind things down, one of the things I can't help but remember are a lot of the comments I would hear from white teachers concerning racism in the community that we taught at. My mentor even asked me some really probing questions, questions that I think are really fair and that I ask myself. If racism exists in a society and school is really just a microcosm of society, because all the children in a school are connected to parents and other community members, is it really ever possible for a school to be safe? How do you deal with race in a school when that question has not been answered in a community? What's more interesting to me wasn't the question she asked, because I felt a lot of it was fair. I, too, have questioned how to prevent racism in schools when it is often a reflection of society. What was different, however, was the context and purpose upon which I or other teachers, in particular teachers of color, have utilized that line of questioning. I have seen it used to question the ability to survive in a racist environment. I have seen it used as a springboard to figure out solutions in a school or community. But in that moment with my mentor, it felt more like she was pleading with me to be more understanding and forgiving of why our school behaved the way it did, particularly towards me. It seemed like her question was really asking, what can we do about it? The seemingly innocuous question that can really be asked two ways, earnestly or rhetorically. In her case, her question seemed rhetorical, and her answer, an empty nothing.
You know, Quinn, it's really easy to ask what to do about racism rhetorically, hypothetically, conceptually, when you aren't the one being victimized by it every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as a teacher of color, this is not a theoretical question that you ponder, and if you can't figure out an answer, you let go. This is a question that you ask every day because you need this to be worked on and to be resolved because it is harming you and harming children like you. It is unrelenting.
Quinn, there's also a premise in that question that I actually disagree with. There is a causal relationship between schools and communities, between schools and society, but that relationship is not one way. Schools are shaped by the community. And communities are shaped by schools. So this idea that schools cannot have an impact because of the dynamics of a community is just wrong. Schools are incredibly positioned to impact and shape communities with community members. I mean, this has been true historically and is no less true today. Why do you think these fringe groups have been doing everything in their power to take over local school boards? They understand the power of a school and a school district.
LOL, so true. I've never thought about it from that direction before.
Mm-hmm. Quinn, I'm also interested, when your mentor was asking you this question, what were you thinking?
It felt like because she was so overwhelmed by the complexity of the problem, that she was abdicating her personal responsibility and the school's responsibility to deal with racism in the school building. It goes back to what you were saying, Mignon, about not believing the school and community are a two-way street. She seemed to believe that schools and teachers have very little control and agency over what happens to students and teachers, which I think is an astounding belief to have, considering the harm that teachers can commit every day. If individual teachers and schools are capable of that level of harm, they should, by all means, be capable of preventing said harm.
This is actually a really interesting reflection, Quinn. Because what we're talking about here is partly how people see the world. Do they see themselves as active participants in community? Do they see education as a tool to create a better world? You know, we end most episodes saying that we believe education can serve all, not just the few. We envision schools as sites of possibility and education as radical care for community. These are not just lines for us. They're not rhetorical fluff. right? We have a genuine belief that schools have the power to transform communities for the better.
Over the course of this season, we've given a lot of details about our shared experience in a school, not to point fingers, but to offer a uniquely close look at that final stage of the broken/leaky diversity pipeline that pushes teachers of color out of the profession. If we're really committed to teacher diversity and student learning achievement, we need to understand what is going wrong.
And in previous episodes, we've talked about relational bullying as a tool of racism to uphold white supremacy in schools. Today, we're chewing on what things school leaders and districts can do. School leaders listening to this may be thinking, well, how the hell do I prevent something as messy and as complex and as insidious as the leaky teacher diversity pipeline?
And frankly, you and I, Mignon, we can't answer that question.
Not wholly.
It's complex as hell. But we do have a life raft, a manual to save drowning teachers of color. We've developed these recommendations based on our experience being pushed out of the classroom. And while that means these recommendations are born from our personal narrative, the unfortunate truth is that our experiences are not unique. If you're a school leader, this episode breaks down what you need to do to rescue teachers of color like us, because we would have stayed.
What we've been giving you is a season-long exit interview.
Which, by the way, we were never asked to give.
All right, Quinn. What is the single biggest thing that would have made you stay?
Leadership. And when I mean leadership, I'm really referring to school administration, school admins, which means really for those who aren't in education, principals and vice principals.
When we think about who is a leader, who has this responsibility and power, we're not including department heads because at the end of the day, they don't have the formalized power that administrators have. And school districts don't have their hands or eyes in the day-to-day of particular school sites. Usually, and realistically, it is the site admin, like you said, the principals and vice principals, the leadership at a particular school, who have the power to make the most difference.
They have the perfect amount of power and proximity.
So what does leadership, what do school administrators need to do to save or rescue drowning teachers of color?
In my opinion, leadership needs to immediately begin steering towards a healthier school culture that will be able to retain teachers of color, to right that ship before teachers of color leave due to an inhospitable environment.
A healthy school culture is an anti-racist school culture, and this requires leadership to shift their attitude from always reacting to acting. It allows them to move the first chess piece instead of always playing defense, and they need to do this now. This is urgent.
Many of you may be wondering, how do school leaders rewrite a school culture to become healthier in order to rescue teachers of color? By one, creating and reaffirming norms. By two, communicating those norms. And three, consistently holding those norms accountable.
So Quinn, talk us through the first one. How can we create and reaffirm norms that will support teachers of color?
I mean, I see that first part as, you know, creating norms as kind of creating a North Star, a compass for the school. Without it, I think schools can get really lost, especially during trying times. These norms should be co-created in an egalitarian manner, which creates buy-in, especially since co-creation moves norms from simply directives to a mutual agreement between school leaders and staff, students, and the community. These norms should also center JEDI, justice, equity, diversity, and inclusion, as well as accessibility.
You know, teachers are expected to co-create classroom community with specific behavioral norms and expectations at the start of every single school year and in every single class. And yet many schools aren't doing what they ask teachers to do.
Mm-hmm.
Schools need to do this for the entire community and specifically for their teaching staff. Schools that don't are excusing themselves from the work that they require of teachers. And there are severe consequences when schools fail to do this.
Mm-hmm. What about policy? Do you think that there's a difference, Mignon, between these norms that we're talking about versus school policy?
Legal jargon and policy buried in a booklet is not a norm. All districts have their legally mandated policies, but those mean nothing when the school culture is racist. Laws and policies don't mean anything if the culture hasn't caught up, because when a school culture isn't aligned with the law, when a society's culture isn't aligned with the law is not enforced. We need norms to immediately be enacted for teachers of color to survive. And these are really just the bare minimum. We need norms on hiring and treatment of teachers of color, right? Transparency during the hiring process about the school's racial climate.
Mm-hmm. None of that mask fishing, greenwashing that we talked about in episode one.
Exactly. But to be honest, that would require some real self-awareness on the part of the school, right? For them to actually be able to see what their racial climate is like.
Yeah, basically BFFR.
Truly. I mean, teachers of color cannot be tokenized. We're not Band-Aids to fix the wounds in a school, right? Cluster hires. So that there are safety in numbers for teachers of color.
That's right.
That's the only reason we were able to stay as long as we did.
Mm-hmm.
Pairing teachers of color with safe mentors, particularly with mentors of color.
And the thing I'm going to add here, too, is because I've been paired with, I think, a lot of teachers, veteran teachers that have not been teachers of color in my history. I think when I look back at my journey, a lot of times organizers doing the pairings would tell me, oh, we paired you this way or that because we think your style, your teaching style is a better match with said teacher. And what I've found is that teachers of color who are new in particular, compared to other teachers, what they need more than anything else is just a safe space. It doesn't matter how alike or unalike or whatever I get from teaching. If the mentor I go to, I don't even feel safe to tell them what is happening to me on a day-to-day basis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the mentor thing is critical. Teachers of color also need policy to prevent being forced or coerced into inequitable labor. No tapping teachers of color in to play special advisory roles or having to educate colleagues without resources and compensation and power to make decisions, not just be figureheads. We need norms around openness and honesty about race. Teachers of color are not safe if racism and race are taboo topics of conversation. Now, this could mean a whole host of things. This could look a lot of ways. There could be Google Forms for feedback about how a variety of things are going.
At consistent intervals.
Exactly. But it definitely means that school admin, principals, and vice principals are talking about race in public and in private. And in so doing, are demonstrating to teachers of color that they are safe people to come to when issues of racism arise, because it is inevitable that they will arise. Teachers of color need norms around harassment and discrimination and bullying that are real, that are tangible, and that are enforced.
And I think it's important to clarify that these norms that Mignon and I have identified here for this sort of life raft manual to rescue drowning teachers of color, this is just based on our personal experience. This is not a comprehensive or exhaustive list of what it means to create a healthy school culture. This is just the fucking bare minimum that you and I and other teachers of color need in order to survive.
This is break glass in case of emergency scenario.
In addition to the creation or reaffirming of these norms also need to be communicated. Otherwise, they're just sitting there, collecting dust. And as Mignon was saying, policies in a booklet or norms in a booklet doesn't count. I mean, when I think back to when you and I started at the school we taught at, you and I were simply emailed this policy booklet and told, hey, read it. Accountability wasn't even a thing about whether or not we looked at what was in those booklets.
And we were lucky we had a booklet because other schools.
All schools need that North Star. So, right, what does it mean to communicate these norms effectively? It means that these norms should be specific, defined, and actionable. Do people actually know how they play out in the real world, especially staff?
Examples need to be given so that people have clarity. Saying don't bully doesn't mean anything. Define what that looks like, what gossip looks like, what exclusion looks like, what a hostile work environment actually looks like. I actually think this is where, so I am the number one person who hates all those online trainings, the bloodborne pathogen, the all, you know, the million online trainings we have to do. I'm the number one person who thinks those are so dumb. But part of why I think they're dumb is because they're online. There's no actual interaction. There's no mechanism for asking questions, for the admin checking if we really understand.
This is what an effective, basically, school meeting or professional development at the beginning of the year should look like. There should be scenarios. There should be actual sentences or lines that people are learning and are creating so they understand what it actually tangibly looks like and plays out like in the real world.
Do you know what's really sad? I got better training on workplace policies when I was a resident assistant in college than I got at any school I've ever worked at.
Do you think it's just because those universities were larger and therefore had more liability? Because you know my theory here on middle high schools being small startups with no really human resources.
Yeah, I don't know.
Just think about it. But the second thing, right, that's needed for effective communication are CFUs.
Check for understanding.
It's something really common that teachers are taught to utilize, like every second of every day that we're in the classroom. And part of it, right, is transparent communication to ensure understanding. Leadership needs to be checking back in with staff members. Who needs further clarification? Does the staff actually understand what we're trying to communicate?
Teachers are required to do this every day. You'd think admin could do this. And also, there are a variety of ways that administrators could employ this, right? Could delegate. They could utilize department leads to check in with their folks and update newbies and revisit these in department meetings, right? As school leaders, it's time to get creative about how to make this work because just not doing it isn't working.
A third component of effective communication is communicating systems of accountability. People need to know what measures will be taken if they disrupt a healthy ecosystem.
Accountability can feel abstract, so let's make this real. What would have accountability looked like for us? School leadership just doing their jobs. I imagine that our school thought they had most or all of these norms. I think most schools probably feel that way, but our experience and the experience of so many teachers of color clearly shows otherwise. You and I were gossiped about, bullied, and excluded until we were chased out of the institution that we both worked at. But all of those policies to prevent gossiping and exclusion were there.
There were really specific pressure points along our story, along our journey, that I truly believe school leadership could have taken different actions or said something different that would have changed the trajectory of my career and yours.
Could have really been holding people accountable.
Our admin could have investigated what was happening. They could have stopped the gossip once they found out about it, instead of even, right, participating somewhat.
Yep.
They could have stopped us from being excluded from the meetings. They were included in that exclusionary email. They were CC'd. When informed that a collaborative project racially harmed students and teachers, they could have stepped in and addressed the racial harm by, right, canceling the project and or reforming the project, to which we gave a lot of ideas as to how to do so. They could have reaffirmed and or created new norms, communicated them, and held people accountable. All of what we're discussing are not complaints. If any of you are hearing this as a complaint, it's time to check, frankly, your bias. Because we are finally giving school leadership concrete and specific ways to retain teachers of color, aka to save us from drowning. And our process shows that it's not necessarily linear. Our situation got so bad that if our admin were to save us, they would have had to first hold individuals accountable before even thinking of creating or reaffirming norms. What this shows is that the manual we have given is not a linear process. Depending on the particulars of a school, beginning at a different point of the manual might make more sense. It's all circular. It all informs each other.
There are a lot of schools that think they are doing this, think they're creating and affirming norms, think they're communicating norms, and think they have systems of accountability. But these same schools are bleeding out teachers of color.
Why, Mignon?
Well, let's think about it. It's because they're not even self-aware enough to understand there's a problem, to understand the severity of the problem, or even to think that it's a problem they should care about.
Maybe, actually, Mignon, that means that we've actually missed up one altogether. Before school leaders can even steer the ship towards a healthier school culture.
In other words, an anti-racist school culture.
Mm-hmm. Before they can establish norms, communicate said norms, right, hold them accountable, the first thing they need to do is reconsider their perception of their school and community. Mm-hmm. To actually take a look at themselves in a mirror. And not one of those, right, like, manipulated mirrors that make you look amazing and stuff. Like
funhouse mirror?
Yeah, or the, what am I thinking about? Snow White? Mm. Right? The Wicked Queen?
Okay, what was the mirror from Harry Potter?
Oh, the Mirror of Arise?
Oh my gosh. He saw what he desired. We don't mess with J.K. Rowling, but.
Because otherwise schools are living in a delusional la-la land. For a school admin to be able to lead, they need to actually see and understand what is happening. Otherwise, they're just a captain steering the entire school into an iceberg they saw or should have seen coming. They just chose to either underestimate or do nothing about it.
So what should school admin do once they actually start taking teacher of color attrition seriously? That's what we've given you in this episode, an emergency protocol. In order for teachers of color to stay, we need immediate action, accountability, and restructuring of school culture towards something healthier, toward one that is the antithesis of white supremacist culture.
In a sea of schools that automatically operate on white supremacy, we understand that doing what we've outlined positions schools and administrators by association as one of the first. And being the first is scary because you know you'll stand alone.
Prioritizing teacher diversity and retention requires imagination, commitment, and moral courage. It also means that school leaders are some of the last lines of defense in both the leaky teacher diversity pipeline as well as the problem women of color in the workplace framework. The decisions or lack of decisions made by school administrators decide whether teachers of color will survive.
Thank you for joining us as we explore how education is failing teachers of color.
We believe education can serve all, not just the few.
We envision schools as sites of possibility and education as radical care for community.
If this episode sparks something for you, email us at diseducationpodcast@gmail.com. Follow us at DisEdOfficial. Check out the poll in our bio or in the show notes. Subscribe and rate us wherever you listen to podcasts. Finally, thank you to Anthony Hernandez at The Grill Studio for engineering this episode, and thank you for listening.